Hi, I'm Doug Gordon, and this is Beta.
You see, my mother thinks that she's cool for reasons that I don't think are very cool. Like, my mother thinks she's super cool because if there's loud noises made in rapid succession, she can count them quite quickly in her mind. Like, if there's a knock on the door, it's like, then she's like, four. Four, definitely, Dave, get that. Or if there's machine gun fire on television, if it's like, then she's like, 3, 11, and 2. She like looks around the room at our faces as if we're going to be like, oh my God, what are you? And only because my dad is such a kind man and he loves her so much, he sometimes takes like a fake minute to pretend to count up the noises himself. So he's like, it was 3, 11, and 2, love? It was 3, 11, how on earth, how do you do that? That's incredible. What is that, like a photographic sound memory or something? Jesus Christ. She's like, I don't know, I can just do it. I don't know how or why, but I can.
That's comedian Maeve Higgins. As you may have figured out from Maeve's lovely accent, she's from Ireland. She's the author of Maeve in America, Essays by a Girl from Somewhere Else. Glamour magazine wrote that if Tina Fey and David Sedaris had a daughter, she would be Maeve Higgins. Maeve is a big fan of the multiverse theory, so I asked her to assume that there is some alternate universe in which Tina Fey and David Sedaris are in fact Maeve's parents.
My mother would be like maybe 12 years older than me. Mm-hmm. So that would be fascinating.
Yeah, that would be weird, wouldn't it?
You know when people are like, my mom's my best friend.
Yeah.
I would love to be best friends with Tina Fey. But also, maybe I would get to live with David Sedaris and his partner, Hugh. I do not know them personally, but I read all of his work and I love the sound of their relationship. So maybe I could like help David pick up the trash from the like English countryside, and Hugh would make me delicious meals, and I'm sure my life would be way better than it is now, where it's just me and my dog fighting over Cheerios in my apartment.
Excellent answer. And I imagine that at this very moment, some crazy Canadian interviewer is asking the other Maeve Higgins about some alternate universe in which Tina Fey and David Sedaris are not her parents. So, you're originally from Cove in County Cork, and that's where you began your comedy career. You even had your own television program, Maeve Higgins, Fancy Vittles. Why did you decide to move to New York City?
Well, yeah, I mean, I have had a great life in Ireland. I left, I think I was 31 when I left, because I suppose, like you mentioned, I had a TV show and I wrote a book and everything while I was there. But Ireland is very small and I think I kind of ran out of opportunities a little bit because Ireland is small. And, you know, lots of reasons I think I was drawn to come to New York, which is still, you know, a big comedy center, and it's like I had a romantic idea of kind of being a writer in New York City. So I really moved for the same reasons a lot of immigrants leave, which is opportunity and adventure.
Yeah. And this is a good time to talk about this. Maeve in America, it's not only the name of your book of essays, it's also the name of this podcast about immigration that you host. Mm-hmm. What inspired you to do this? Obviously, part of it would be the fact that you're an immigrant yourself, but I imagine there's more to it than that, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. When I first moved here, I think I was really drawn to other immigrants because I think when you're new in a place and you're trying to find your feet, you know, the other new people, like they're great comfort to you and guide. And also just from like a storytelling point of view, if you leave one place and start a whole new life in another country, then instantly there's a story there, isn't there? Like there's a journey. So I was drawn to immigrants, the kind of adventure of that. And I suppose, you know, so many comedians have podcasts.
Yes.
But I never wanted to do one. I certainly had offers before. I never wanted to do one that was just like comedians talking about like how they got started in comedy or whatever. I think that's ground is well trodden. Mm-hmm. So one strange thing about like, you know, I live in New York and 45% of New Yorkers are born in a different country. But like I don't hear them. I only hear American voices on, you know, a lot of media like podcasts and TV and radio. So I thought it'd be cool to like have a platform where immigrants got to tell their own story. So that was kind of my motivation. I didn't realize, like, you know, myself and my producer were kind of coming up with the idea and working on it throughout 2015, and then it got picked up in, I think, like the summer of 2016. So, you know, I didn't realise then how immigration has always been such a heated political topic in America.
Yeah.
But it obviously ramped right up with, you know, a president that was elected on an anti-immigrant ticket, and then somebody who's gone after, you know, the administration has gone after immigrants in such a kind of brutal way. I didn't know that was going to happen when I started to do the podcast, certainly. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite guest that you've had on your podcast?
Well, somebody's story who really stuck with me was Zaza. His name is Muhammad Zaza, but like everyone just calls him Zaza because in his school there was like 50 Muhammads. So he's a luggage salesman here in Midtown in New York, and he is also a Syrian asylum seeker. And the reason I liked him and I liked just spending time with him was because, well, actually, he kind of reminds me of one of my uncles.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Also because, yeah, even though he's like the same age as me, but there's just something about him that reminds me of my uncle.
I think that's cool.
Just kind of, he makes like dad jokes and he's kind of goofy.
I mean.
But the thing that was cool about him was you hear all about like Syrian refugees and Syrian asylum seekers, and currently Syrians are banned from entering the US. And then you meet Zaza and he's just like, you know, a chubby guy in his 30s.
I spoke to my wife. I told her it's either we will end up in a refugee camp or we'll take this and go. And it was not guaranteed because B1 visa, the officer in the States can reject me and send me back home. So it was a risk.
Mm.
And we took the flight and it was the longest 16 hours in my life. Seeing all your dreams, all your memories, all your families.
Where did you fly to?
Chicago. They told us it's a good airport.
People like him have been banned. They've been demonized so much that they've been banned from the country.
Mm.
And then just to meet him and just see his day-to-day life, and I think that was hugely valuable for me, you know, as somebody who's interested in Syria and as somebody who's interested in, you know, where we're headed with immigration in this country. And also he's just like a fun, lovely person to spend time with, you know, him and his family.
Mm, yeah. You have this essay in your book called Small Talk, in which you say that, quote, the best parts of a person are buried too deep to be uncovered by as blunt an instrument as a direct question, end quote. So that leads me to wonder, does that mean I should be asking you indirect questions if I want to discover the best parts of you?
Possibly. I mean, in an interview situation, it's a little bit different
mm-hmm.
because, you know, we both like understand what's happening. But I think if I just met you at a party or like a friend's dinner or something, what I find tough to deal with is like this kind of like, okay, how do you know Sarah? Where do you work? What do you work as? Like these kind of like direct sort of questions that I feel are maybe like designed to like put me onto whichever shelf I belong on, you know, status wise or work wise.
Yeah,
or,
what do you do for a living? Yeah.
You know, and I live in New York, and I think it can be quite transactional, like interactions with people are sort of like, are you important or not? And I think that's understandable. You know, this is like a big, ambitious city and it's like a center for capitalism, and like time is, you know, short and energy is short. So, but what I love to do, and I think I'm sure it's probably from being Irish, is just kind of wander around in conversation and not be so direct. And I think small talk is the kind of perfect little in-between space where you actually do get to know somebody. You just might know, you know, concrete facts about them. Like you might know where, you know, like where they work or where they're from or whatever, but you get to know them, I think, in more subtle ways. And I didn't realize what a kind of precious commodity that was until I kind of felt the loss of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah. Do you still consider yourself an outsider here in America?
Well, you know, I've been here for 5 years and in ways that when I got here, it was so familiar to me because I grew up watching American TV shows and reading American books, and it was so familiar. The longer I stay here, the more the place mystifies me.
Mm.
It's funny, isn't it? Like the more I learn about it, I kind of think, wait, what? How did that come to be? Or like, why do people get uncomfortable when I mention this? Or, you know.
Yeah. I've been here. Sorry to interrupt, Maeve. I've been here like almost 19 years now. And it continues to baffle me. And things, yeah, there are things that the more I'm here, the longer I'm here, in some ways, the more confused I am about this.
Really?
A little bit, yeah. So isn't...
Are you a citizen now?
No, I'm an alien of extraordinary ability, which is what you are too, right? And I wanted to ask you about that because I kind of like that. I think I'd like to say that that's one of the few, that's a mistake that the U.S. government didn't make. And I've always thought of myself as an alien, but since I tend to struggle with self-doubt, I often question the extraordinary ability part. So if you don't mind my asking, what do you think of being considered an alien of extraordinary ability? Do you like that?
It's a very useful visa, you know, and I do qualify for it, but it definitely, you know, made me question a lot of things. Like, it made me question, well, like, how come I'm allowed to be here? And there's, like, an astrophysicist sitting in a, you know, refugee camp in Jordan who's not allowed to be here. Or it also made me think about how we categorize people and, like, who am I more valuable than, you know, a disabled child who like has yet to prove that they can do, you know, that they can achieve something extraordinary, or, you know, it's very tricky.
Yeah, it is
when
tricky.
When you get into it.
Yeah, I had this shortly after I got my green card, after I went to Winnipeg, which is where my wife's from, and for a visit above North Dakota, and we came back in, the U.S. Customs Guard was kind of scoffing, like, not scoffing, but saying, you have this extraordinary ability? Are you as good as the Rolling Stones? And what I should have said, I was too slow-witted, what I should have said, well, yeah, I'm better than Rolling Stones circa Steel Wheels, but I didn't think of it till later. Yeah, burn, yeah. So, but getting back to this idea of the outs.
You would have been deported immediately.
Yeah, I would have. And it's still probably going to happen. I am on double secret probation here, so it could happen any time. But getting back to the outsider thing, I wanted to ask you, isn't there part of you that doesn't want to let go of the feeling of being an outsider, you know, since comedians often tend to be outsiders? Do you know what I mean?
I do, yeah. It's certainly useful, isn't it, as a writer, as, you know, a comedian observing. And feeling like that little bit on the fringes. So, yeah, good point. I mean, I don't... it's also weirdly, I feel like I can see Ireland more clearly from here too. Mm. Like that it's made me a bit of an outsider in Ireland where I grew up and spent most of my adult life.
And is that a good feeling? Is that a bad kind of a... I would get the sense that you'd be kind of sad about that or not necessarily?
It's a bit of a mix. You know, I have that Irish ability to always be like melancholy and happy at the same time.
Yeah. But you go back for Christmas every year, don't you?
I do. I go back and, you know, I do feel sometimes like when I'm in Dublin where I lived for many years, I feel like a bit of a ghost kind of like haunting the place. And I'm like, I don't belong here anymore. But like you mentioned, it's useful to be on the outside looking in, I think. And it certainly helps me to understand the place a little bit more. Both here and back in Ireland, I think, when you have that distance.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's next for you?
So right now I'm writing. I'm, you know, writing for the New York Times and I'm contracted with them. So I'm going to write a lot more, I think, about climate change.
Okay.
And then I'm also making a fictional podcast. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Can you tell us anything about that or it's too soon?
No, I can. It's going to be on Audible and it's about immigration. So myself and my writing partner are just writing it now because I was so sad to lose my other podcast, the one we talked about that was about immigrants. It was immigrants telling their own stories.
Yeah, it's not on.
It's
not on anymore, right? You just did. You only got to do what?
We did two seasons and we didn't get commissioned again.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all there for people to listen to, but I would have loved to keep doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think fiction might be a more interesting sort of a way to like worm into people's hearts.
Yes.
Because I think there's such a gap between if you don't care, making people care about something that doesn't affect them is really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I guess making people do anything. But I think that certainly there's this gap in... understanding or like empathy for immigrants here in America. And I think now that so many groups of immigrants are under attack, I'm trying to figure out other ways to kind of make sure people know that we're just human. So maybe fiction can help that, you know.
Maeve Higgins is a comedian, podcaster, and the author of Maeve in America, Essays by a Girl from Somewhere Else. That does it for this edition of Beta. Catch up on past episodes by subscribing to the Beta podcast via iTunes or wherever you catch your favorite pods. You can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta or on Twitter at @WPRBeta. Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions. Our technical director and music director is Steve Gotcher.
Could you turn that racket down? I'm trying to iron in here.
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
It's rather obvious which category you fit into. Have a nice day.
And thanks to you, our alphas. Until next week, I'm Doug Gordon.
If you think you're nervous now, wait till you're on the air.